Hello and welcome to the Benmark Photography Podcast. Today I'm with the man who helps so many other fitness people to realise their potential, unlock any things in their brains that need to be unlocked and actually just fully achieve their potential. That's Mr. Kieran O'Neill. So welcome, Kieran.
Ben, it's great to be on, mate. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's my pleasure. So for those of you that don't know Kieran runs TMP, which is Total Mental Performance. He's based over in Dubai, but he started off his journey over in our lovely island of the UK. So just give the followers a little bit of a rundown on who you are and your backstory.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the founder of Total Mental Performance. We're the fastest growing mindset service dedicated to the fitness industry. So I run that, and then outside of my day-to-day TMP work, I have a handful of high net worth clients, so business owners, CEOs, executives, investors, professional athletes, those types. I work with them all on mindset, so managing challenging emotions, smashing through limiting beliefs, ultimately to hit two things, which is peak performance and clarity. Where is it the fuck we want to go? How are we going to get there? How are we going to evolve the person that we want to become in order to get there?
Amazing. And so tell us a little bit about your journey into where you are today, because I know I've heard it and I think the listeners need to hear it, because it's quite an amazing journey that you've been through to get to where you are today and working with so many amazing people. So
there's three options, right? We've got the condensed short version, we've got the medium version, we've got the long haul. Which story do you want?
I want people to really hear about it.
All right, let's jump in then. So where do I start? So brought up in Hertfordshire, Welwyn Garden City, if anyone knows it, a small town just north of London. And grew up from humble beginnings, you know, grew up in a council house, but never grew up without anything that, you know, like I've seen poverty. I didn't grow up in poverty. Do you know what I mean? Like my version of feeling hard done by is very, very, very fortunate. But I grew up in a council house in a very nice part of town, and so I always felt like I was the one that didn't have enough, even though I did. But as a child, you don't necessarily recognize that. So I didn't go to university. I left school when I was 16, and really I couldn't concentrate. I was always distracted. I was more interested in selling sweets and selling little cans of Coca-Cola in the playground that I was actually studying, and I loved it. It was great, but I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't focus, and it was only a couple of years ago I got diagnosed with ADHD, which made total sense. But so after I left school, I found something called the Peter Jones Academy. So Peter Jones is a investor and entrepreneur. You might have heard of him from the Dragon's Den series on TV. And he had a school where instead of you running, you know, instead of you doing coursework or studying or anything like that and having to do exams, you basically run a business and they'd assess you on how you run that company. So I was 16. I hadn't sold anything before. I'd never run, or built a product. And I built a product where if you got your phone wet, put it in a little bag and ziplock it up, it dries it. Back then, obviously, mobile phones weren't waterproof. So you drop your phone down the toilet and then it was done. And so that was great fun. Learned a hell of a lot. Bought 50, sold them all. Bought 100, sold them all. Bought 200, and then I think 100 of them are still in my mum's loft. So after that, I really learned I didn't know how to sell B2B. So I went into software sales when I was 17. Offered a CEO to go and work for free for the summer. I said, if I can come and work for free for the summer, I'll sell loads, and it will also give me everything that I lost, all the skills I need after I failed in the business. So he said, sure, let me give you an interview just to test you out. Gave me an interview, offered me the job. And by the time, just before my 18th birthday, I'd sold $500,000 of software. But it wasn't like overnight. You know, I did 9 months of not selling anything, nearly got fired, made lots of mistakes. But I've been boxing since I was about 12, I think. So I've been boxing for a while, and I was kind of reaching that point where it was kind of make or break for me. It was like, now is the time where you are going to make it or you're not. So I'm 18. I've got a load of commission.
Can I just jump in quickly? How come you got into boxing?
My dad used to box, and he never wanted me to fight. And I think when your dad tells you not to do something, you really want to do it. But I always wanted to do it, but I never got a shot. And then one of my best mates, Louis Calvert, who's also a coach, he said to me, do you want to come boxing sometime? And I was like, yeah, all right. So we went along and just got hooked on it. Just got hooked on the pads, hooked on progression. Really, that's actually where I first got my first ever coach, my first ever mentor. And that changed my life. And that also set a framework for me for the rest of my life. I've always got a coach. I've always got a mentor. Always not like consistently. I call it in TMP the boardroom. I have a series of strategic advisors and coaches around me. So no matter what life or the market throws at me, I know exactly who to call about any problem. And that has served me so well, saving a lot of time, a lot of heartache. So I got into it because, Louis said, do you want to come along? I went, yeah, okay. I told my dad, expecting him to be excited. And he says, oh, no, don't do that. And yeah, this is a tip for you, Ben. Anything you don't want your son to not do, don't tell him not to do it, because he'll fall in love with it like I did. Just go, yeah, great idea. Yeah, you tear on. And use reverse psychology, because that's what I did, and I took it pretty seriously. But it's a great point you mentioned there, actually, because the boxing...
Didn't it make part of the reason, you, though?
What's that?
Didn't it make you, though?
Yeah, 100%. Definitely. But I think...
So do you think then that it was actually the best thing that he said?
I guess so, yeah. Upon reflection, it did work out quite well, yeah. Well, depending on how you measure it, right? Because there's some really hot upsides, some low sides, but ultimately, did it evolve me into the human being I am today? And yeah, absolutely. It definitely worked out. But what was quite interesting was before that, my dad was my football manager, and he benched me every game, and because he didn't want to upset the other. I didn't want to upset the people that, you know, like the other kids' parents and stuff. And I was genuinely dog shit at football. And as an adult, we can laugh. But when you're a kid and your own dad says you're not good enough by not playing you, bearing in mind we were bottom of the bottom league, I took that as I'm not good enough and I'm not worthy. So going into boxing, you can't get substituted. You're literally there on your own merit. So I think kids at that point make a decision. They go, yeah, fuck it. You're right. And they accept the message and they're done. And they go, right, yeah, you're right. I'm never going to do it. Or they go the opposite way. And they go, fuck you, I'm going to prove you wrong. And that's where overachievers come from. And, you know, it might sound glamorous and sexy at the beginning when you start winning, but actually underneath that's a lot of fear, a lot of feelings of inferiority, feelings of not being good enough. And you might have the external accolade, whether that's the body, the money, the success. It doesn't necessarily make you happy. And that path from my boxing, I left the job. I decided, right, I'm going to really go for this. Started training like 2-3 times a day, 6 days a week, 5 days a week. It was definitely overtraining and under eating. I was doing like 1,200 calories. It was 56 kilos at 5'8" in terms of height. It was insane, but managed to get to sixth in the UK, managed to make it on the England team, but wasn't good enough to stay on it and wasn't good enough to break on to Team GB. Like there are levels, and England football is like England boxing is like championship football. Team GB boxing is like premiership. That really is the golden standard. And I kind of moved up, and I'd never had a nosebleed my whole career. First right hand I got hit with, blood pouring everywhere. So I spent 8 years boxing, and that culminated in anxiety, an eating disorder. So binge eating disorder, depression, and a failed suicide attempt. And it all culminated in this point of, you know, I was so wrapped up in the identity of being a fighter, so wrapped up in the identity of, you know, having to be successful, having to have a six pack, having to be a certain way. At the time, I was trying to run me and my friend Luke Neville, we set up a company called Make Weight, which was a nutrition app for fighters. And we both lost £15,000 each, so 30 grand each, all in on that failed business. And everything was all coming to a fucking head. And, you know, the girl I was seeing at the time, she left me. It all just collapsed in. I just didn't want to be here anymore. I was driving down the motorway, down the A1M, thinking I'm going to crash the car because I don't want to be here anymore. But I didn't crash the car, luckily. And I pulled into South Mim Services. And I called my mum. She come pick me up. I was crying. I was shaking. You know, it wasn't good. So then I had a rebuild period that took me quite a few months trying to rebuild, you know, just my self-confidence, my self-worth. You know, I wasn't boxing anymore. So I went from 56 kilos.
Can I ask in that time, what was the one thing you were really like focusing on just get in?
What was that after that moment or
Yeah, so like
before?
after your mum's picked you up and you said it a rebuild, like what was the one thing that you really just felt like you, what was the first thing you were aiming for?
Getting through each day, I think, like, because like depression is a funny one, and I wouldn't say I was clinically depressed insofar as, you know, I had it for like years and years, and it wasn't going away. But I think at that point it was really baby steps, you know. Me
Yeah.
getting up and brushing my teeth for the morning was like, that was a win. I didn't want to leave the house. I didn't think I left the house for 2 weeks after that incident. Just getting out of bed and like walking, and yeah, like that was hard. And then at some point I was like, right, you know what, I've got to do something with my time, because this is, I fucking can't do this anymore. And I picked up a part-time job recruiting salespeople for Samsung, and it was great because I learned how to hire world-class individuals. And they wanted me to go full time. I wasn't interested because I still had this sort of glimmering hope in my boxing that I could get it back on track. So I went into that, and I became the top guy there, placing the most amount of candidates, even though I was only working part time. Then they says, you got to go full time or you leave. So I said, okay, I'll leave. And they went, what? And I'll leave. I'm not doing this full time. And they says, all right, you can stay. I says, okay, but I want a pay rise. And they went, fuck off. I went, all right, find something else then. And I stayed. And even at part time, I was still top or second because of the when I was in there, I was working and I was out. It was really quite savage. That rebuilt my confidence. And then I just had this experience where I started to realize that boxing wasn't for me. And my own mental performance coach, Hazel, she's an amazing woman. She got me to visualize two Kierans. One Kieran was, he'd just come back from the Tokyo Olympics, and he had basically won his gold medal and he was happy and engaged. And then there was another Kieran who was working in software sales. He was kind of doing his thing. And I realized actually I wanted to be in the city working in business. I didn't want to be the boxer, but I was struggling to come to terms with that, which is where a lot of this pressure and a lot of this not feeling good enough and worthiness came from. So we did a lot of work on that, went into software sales. And this was like, because as a fighter, you lose all your party years. You know, I wasn't going out drinking, I was in the gym. Everybody was going, I'd go on one weekend to Ibiza every year, and I was back in the gym training. So I kind of just had it, went into software sales, cleared off the 15K debt. In fact, I got to London, it didn't work out either. So I moved to London, and the flat that I was renting a room that was an illegal sublet, and I got kicked out of that. And then the job I was in wasn't the right fit, and I couldn't go back home. So I was sleeping on my auntie's sofa in a one bedroom council flat with her and my uncle. Monday to Friday, then I was getting a train to go sleep back at the sofa at my parents on the weekends, and I was training boxing at the same time as well, and it was really tough. But then I called up a mentor, a guy called Ron Goddard, who's still one of my mentors today. And I called him up because he was going to invest in my previous app, and he didn't. He showed us the way that it wasn't going to work. And I said, I'm fed up of being poor. Can you help me? I really don't know what to do. So he mentored me, told me to read Rich Dad Poor Dad to change the game, and he gave me a job at one of the biggest e-commerce companies in the world called Rakuten. They sponsor Barcelona Football Club, they sponsor the Golden State Warriors, some really big dogs. And I cleared off my 15K debt in 7 months because I'd sell into Europe 9 a.m. till 4 p.m., then 4 p.m. till 8 p.m., maybe 9 p.m. some nights. I'll be selling into New York, who are 4 hours behind. So I was just a machine. I was just like, you know, the Wolf of Wall Street style, like $100 to $150 a day. It was like, I'm clearing this fucking debt off. Once I cleared the debt off, all of a sudden I had all this cash. I was like, well, now what do I do? So I started partying around Europe. Like every, I can't remember what the year was, but that summer, every weekend, it was like, you know, it was in Ibiza, Budapest, where else did we go? And to Croatia, went all over the different cities, and it was just like literally work hard, play hard. Yeah, I spent 6 years selling software, which was great, earned great money. But selling software is great if you're really insecure and you're skint. But when you're not skint anymore and you don't really give a fuck about what other people think and you have that security in yourself, it was like why am I doing this? And I went to a company that wasn't very good for me. They hired too many salespeople for the size of the market. So not a single person was hitting their target. It was a very toxic environment. The guy that was running it was a very, very toxic guy. And not the CEO, the CRO, the guy that was running the sales function. And yeah, it was just horrible. And I had everything on paper because I had a senior sales position, you know, an apartment in central London, just by London Bridge. I really up and coming company as well, but like just miserable. I just was so unhappy. Now, I've always been coaching and mentoring on the side for a long time, whether that's young people, whether that's colleagues, whether that's, you know, the younger salespeople in my teams. I've always coached and mentored. And it was about 3 years ago, I sort of thought, well, fuck it. What am I doing? Why don't I just do this all the time? I love the coaching. I don't necessarily love the selling anymore. I requalified as a cognitive hypnotherapist, NLP practitioner, a peak performance coach, and did a load of other little hypnotherapy qualification. I did lots of different ones. And I just started coaching loads of people for free. And then they started paying me. They started referring me lots of clients. And they were mainly in the business space, really, to be honest. And I had a few coaches, but not that many. Then Adam Haley invited me to come out and speak at his event in Dubai. Did a talk there, ended up picking up 9 coaches off that one talk, maybe 10, including Adam himself. And then I sort of started to see actually a lot of my story and a lot of what the work that I do is directly applicable to the fitness industry. You know, the fear of not being good enough, body image, comparing ourselves to everyone else around us. Like, it was all stuff I'd experienced in boxing. It was all stuff I experienced in sales. And as soon as I delivered a presentation on basically what is imposter syndrome and how to manage challenging emotions, like the whole room was sat on the edge of their seats. And afterwards, they all come and work with me. I started to realize, oh, hang on, I think there's a bigger issue here at play. And then off the back of that, you know, fast forward 12 months, we've worked with over 100 fitness coaches around the world on challenging emotions, on their mindset. Like I said, we're the fastest growing mindset service in the world for the fitness industry. We launched a conference last, well, you were there, Ben. You came along to the conference. So that had 30 people, and we did that in 3 weeks. This year, we're launching the next conference. There's going to be 100 people at the NED on September, the first Friday of September. So we're going even bigger. And yeah, it's kind of spiraled from there, you know, and you know, we're growing fast. I love what I do. I shut my laptop every single day with a fat, shit-eating grin. And I'm just like, you know what, like, you can't beat this. And that's what I'm always plugging to my clients, is you've got to build a lifestyle that you love. You've got to help people that you really want to help. And, you know, having experienced what I did in boxing, in sales, that's really helped me pass on those learnings to up-and-coming coaches. But also, like, I'm working with some of the top coaches, and particularly online coaches. I'm working with some of the top online coaches in the industry. And they benefit from my experience of not feeling good enough, of imposter syndrome, of comparison syndrome, but also of being a high performer and having been successful in different fields and knowing that there's more to get, because there is always more to get. A lot of my top coaches, they don't need a coach. They don't need a coach. Things are going well, but they know there's an extra 1 to 5% they can get. So it's been quite a journey, but we got here, and yeah, I'm happy to be on it.
That was definitely a good story. That's
definitely a story.
I'm intrigued, right? So you said you were at Samsung and you were doing really well, part-time, obviously just coming out of where you'd been, like mentally. Did you do so well because you felt like you had nothing to lose? Oh, hello. Sorry, that was my internet.
Sorry, back on.
Sorry. So you were at Samsung and you, as you said, you were doing so well. You know, you were just asking for pay rises and doing that stuff. Was that because you felt like you had nothing to lose?
Pretty much. I didn't care for that job. It was great, but I was like, well, at the end of the day, like, I still want to give fighting another go. So it's like, I think when you start to realize that you most of the time you hold all the coins, but you don't feel like you hold all the coins. So in that scenario, I did hold the coins, and I just kind of just they had to really make it worth my while for me to stay. And I think that's the problem with a lot of employees, is they think that their employer holds all the coins, that they can't go and get a job elsewhere. So then they kind of get stuck. Well, actually, when you realize, well, if you're genuinely good at what you do, and if you genuinely care about what you do, you hold the coins. So I think in that moment, I kind of went, well, I don't really need this. So, and then they start to realize, hang on, if we take this guy away, we've got to hire probably another two people to ramp them up to get them to those sorts of numbers. And that's going to take time. So, yeah, I would say it was just, who cares?
Do you find that you, because like I know how much you care about your business and how much you've put into all of it, and I've spoken to others about like just what you've created and obviously heard your story a couple of times now. I've always been quite interested because I remember going through a stage when I worked at my previous company and I'd literally slaved away for like a year and a half trying to get a promote, like get a pay rise because me and my wife were about to buy our house and I knew that 2 grand extra got us 10 grand extra house. So I was like, right, okay, I've just got to get this 2 grand. And that was my vision. And I proved to them how much money I made and all of that type of stuff for their company and how much time I saved them and all of this stuff. And it equated to nothing. Yet the year afterwards, when I literally said, I don't care anymore, I had my best ever year personally. How do you find that thing of like, obviously, you meet so many people who just care so much about what they do and the business they do. And then you've also seen the other side of it where you've just done things that you didn't care about, yet you've made good sums of money. How do you find that, like, or how do you depict that balance of like people that just seem to do well but almost don't seem to care? And then people who care so much but just don't seem to ever get anywhere?
Yeah, for me, it's really simple. It's disassociating your self-worth from the outcomes. Because when you disassociate your self-worth from the outcomes, you are doing it because you love it, or you're doing it because you genuinely want to help, or it's an experiment. And like, for example, we just launched a competition. I've never run a competition before. And we haven't gone small. We're putting 6 grand of prizes out, and we're putting 2.5 grand of cash to charity. So like if I care too much about the outcome, then if it doesn't work out, I'm gonna feel really bad and not enough and not worthy. But I'm doing it because I want to help the industry. I'm doing it because I want to help our mental health charity. I'm doing it because I want to change as many lives as I can. So I'm attached to why I'm doing it. I'm not attached to the outcome. And if that falls on its face, and if nobody liked and shared or whatever. I think at the moment we've got like, it's not even 24 hours old. We've got 300 comments, 170 likes. Bearing in mind, I usually get about 30 likes on our page. It's what's funny is if you looked at our page, you'd have no idea the kind of business that's behind it. Like, I only learned about Instagram really in January. I thought, okay, I've got to kind of start trying this stuff out, which kind of makes it fun. But ultimately, I'm disassociating my self-worth from the outcome. And if we fail and it doesn't work, I'm still a good human being. I still am valuable. I still have skill set. I still can help people. And I think that's it. But people often associate their self-worth with the outcome. Did I get a client result? Did I get a transformation? I'm guessing you see this all the time, right? Somebody's been dieting for 8 to 12 weeks and they put a lot of pressure on themselves to look a certain way and to have, hopefully the pictures come out in a certain way,
But do you know what was
like.
actually quite interesting is I had my own photo shoot 2 weeks ago and it was with another professional photographer. And I went there not being Benmark Photography, I went there as being Benmark. And I actually like tried to carb up a little bit to look a bit fuller on the day. Turned up and I've always had bad love handles. It's just where my weight sits. I'm normally okay with it, but I don't often have my shirt off. It's not me that's running around with my shirt off, it's normally everyone else. And I came away from the shoot, and if you saw them, the photos, I clearly look a lot better because I've lost 20 odd kilos and got a bit more muscle on me. I'm certainly feeling better. But I remember looking at them feeling like this is okay, but weirdly, I'm not done. Because I was like, for me, if I show this to someone else, this could change their life.
Mm-hmm.
However, I know I've still got more left in the tank, so I know what I can do. So I've taken myself away from the outcome. I know I can achieve more, but the outcome from that shoot no longer impacted me as a person directly. Like, I wasn't like, that's it, I'm life's over, like, I'm terrible. It was like, and it was, you know, a fair chunk of cash, and I've not even thought twice about it. And it's amazing when you realize that you can take yourself out of that. If the outcome doesn't necessarily work out how you planned it to, it's okay. Because there's another chance, there's another go, and also you've just learned something.
That's it. And you tapped into your why, which is you want to inspire people. Whereas I think a lot of people are doing it out of fear and insecurity, and sometimes they need a breakthrough moment like one of your photo shoots to help them overcome that and let go of that. And it's a very transformation experience. But having worked with, you know, world champion bodybuilders and, you know, some of the top coaches in the industry, I see a lot of body dysmorphia, and it's easy to get wrapped up in that image and go, oh my God, I've got to look a certain way. Interestingly, I've never really done a body comp training plan, so to speak. I've just started with my coach, Kirk Miller, about 8-9 weeks ago now. And what's fascinating is I've never cared about, like, when I was fighting, I really cared about what I looked. I always had to have a six pack, and that's what drove my eating disorder. And I kind of just sort of didn't care about my body that much this year. I've just sort of been doing a bit of exercise and whatever. But once you start, all of a sudden, I did the opposite of what you did, which I started getting attached to the outcome. And I was like, why am I not bigger? Why am I not leaner? Oh my God. And all of a sudden I started overthinking. I started looking at all of my progress pictures, and I was like, oh my God, I've barely changed. What about this? What about that? And all of a sudden I started projecting fear and anxiety, and I didn't need to do that. I sort of caught myself and went, ah, okay, what's this about? Okay, there's clearly a bit of insecurity around your body there. So either the insecurity was always there and it just, this external trigger brought that up, or I injected it because of my environment. Maybe, I don't know, but you're not doing it for that reason. You're doing it because you want to inspire others. I started training because I wanted to get more energy. I wanted to feel a bit stronger and just kind of just give myself a new challenge. But the main reason, this is a really funny thing, the main reason I did it, I understand fitness coaches inside out, but I want to take that a level further. I want to understand my coach's client's mindset inside out. I want to understand how they think. I want to understand how they feel. I want to understand what's going on in their clients' minds so I can relay that back to the coach while I'm working on their mind and give that extra perspective. But I completely lost sight of that because all of a sudden I wanted abs again. All of a sudden I wanted to be bigger. I wanted to be stronger, and I got attached to the outcome. As soon as I got attached to the outcome, fuck, that's what I do. I stopped taking progress pictures.
It's actually interesting listening to you, because all of the things that you said you wanted to be stronger, you wanted to have more energy and all of that lot. Not one point of the things that you said you wanted was, I want to be shredded and look lean.
For
all the things that actually want to have more energy. But then all of a sudden you start looking at the wrong thing, and you can see how quickly it goes off on a tangent where, like, I get so many people in here and they can look incredible and their face just doesn't show it. Yet the second you make them realize that this isn't about your body, this is about you owning yourself, and you know you're in control now and you've done absolutely everything you can to be here and now show it off. And they suddenly realize, I have done, and actually I don't look bad, I look good. And I don't look as bad as what I thought I was going to do, and actually this isn't as bad. All of a sudden a different person comes out of them. So they're not actually tying it to, I said, like, you know, I've shot with Adam, for example, and Adam doesn't have very thick abs. So when we were doing his shoot, we were struggling to find a shot that we could get with his abs to pop. And I got one shot of him where it's only all of a sudden he had abs, and he looked at me and went, you've given me abs. Like, I've never had those. But yeah, I've worked with other people who literally could fart and have like the best abs they've ever had. And, you know, and then I said, everyone's like, I think they put so much pressure on that has to be a certain way and that has to be a certain way. It's like, well, no, if you attach it to, are you in a better place? Have you learned a lot? Have you gained a lot from this experience of what you've gone through over the last 3, 6, 12, 9 weeks, whatever it is? If you have, then you've won.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. And it's the person you've become into that moment versus that moment. And I think the notion of peace behind overachievement or achievement is just bullshit. And you kind of get wrapped up on, wow, well, when I look like this, or I've got this many clients, or I'm doing this much revenue, or when, no, it doesn't work like that. Like, I can't remember who said it, but I have internalized this philosophy and I've kind of remolded it, but strive satisfied. Striving towards something whilst being satisfied in who you are and what you have around you. Like that in my opinion, is the secret. Because otherwise, what's the point? You know, I've worked with some of the most successful people on the planet. I mean, one private net worth client, self-made guy that's worth $10 billion. And he's still stuck in the loop of not feeling good enough, not feeling worthy, anxiety, stress. I can honestly say I wouldn't. If you said, hey guys, you can swap bodies and minds, I can look you dead in the eye and say, I would not swap position. No way. No fucking way. Because you still got a lot to do. And in my opinion, as long as you're comfortable in what you're doing and you believe in it yourself and you're striving satisfied, that to me is, money's overrated, you know? It's like that to me just doesn't add up.
The thing is, you can have all the money you want, but if it's not actually making you happy, then you're just working. I've actually started reading that. I'm potentially guessing you've read it, is the Diary of Zero.
I haven't. I've heard of the philosophy. Adam's mentioned it to me. I've heard it. Everything Adam's described to me, I agree with. Like, you've got to make the most of it and enjoy it.
It's interesting. Like, one of the bits was saying, like, you know, you could save up and when you die have 20, 30,000 in the bank. So why have you worked that 30,000 into the bank when you could have just lived life a little bit?
Yeah, exactly that.
It's crazy how you can still, you know, I think understanding that you can make money and be profitable and have a security is one thing. Overworking, stressing yourself out and not being happy just to make a few more quid or to do whatever is just really not worth it. Unless that's what you know, it's just really not. What is the next thing for, other than the event, but what's the next thing for you in terms of your journey moving forward?
Oh, mate, I'm fucking so excited. So the TMP Academy. So we launched an Academy pilot 4 months ago, 5 months ago, and it's been going really well. We've got a really solid net of coaches. And the way the Academy works is really simple. We have two masterclasses a month, because coaches have got so many Zooms they have to sit on. I don't think they're actually taking this information in action yet. So I don't think putting more on the coaches is helpful. So we put two high impact masterclasses and they have to take one thing away and actually execute on it before the next one. And then on top of that, we've got our community. So in our Facebook group, like, people are putting selfie videos in there of, I'm really struggling, I'm finding this difficult, or I made this tweak and it's really working. And like, the community we've got, is anyone struggling, they put something in there and everybody jumps in and they all support each other. So the Academy really is my big focus for 2022. In terms of like my one-to-one stuff, you know, fully booked, I've got a waiting list, which is great, but it's really the Academy where I can help people at scale. So the next phase now, mate, so I'm building an app, and in this app, our coaches are going to be able to go in there. And if they're feeling overwhelmed, there's like 5 tools and techniques they can go in and they can execute that within 3 to 5 minutes by themselves with no one else, to then become less overwhelmed. We've got things on there about imposter syndrome, comparison syndrome, how to manage it, what is it, looking at peak performance, setting up world-class routines, productivity routines, planning, organization, clarity, all of these different things. I can't wait. I really, really can't wait. You know, so there's three main sections. So one is simplify. So that's for when you're overwhelmed. One is structure. So that's ultimately, structure equals freedom. And if you don't have structure, you'll burn out. So it's getting people to set up their diaries, their weeks, their days, so they don't burn out. And then they're striving satisfied. So that's more on the identity level. That's more on the peak performance side of things. So yeah, that's coming for January for all of our Academy members. So they'll not only be able to get access to our community and the live masterclasses, but they're also just going to have a literal toolkit in their pocket. So whenever they're feeling stressed or overwhelmed or insecure, they can dive into a module and go and actually explore that in the moment and then get back to work. So that's the big thing for me this year, man. And I think I genuinely want to change the industry. when it comes to a mindset perspective, I think a lot of the industry is driven by fear, scarcity, insecurity, self-doubt. But a lot of these coaches are changing people's lives and they're doing it out of that. And I think coaches get lost as to why they're doing it. So, you know, let's put it this way. Let's say a coach has 25 to 100 clients, right? Let's say 20. Let's go. I like going conservative on numbers and then overachieving, right? Let's say I'll get my calculator right now. So let's say we help 200 coaches and they have 20 clients each, right? So just through coaching the coaches, I've helped 200 people. But if they have 20 clients each, that's 4,200 people I've been able to impact. A lot of them have got a lot more clients than that. So, you know, like you can start to do the numbers. Now, my goal is to have helped. So year one, we did 100 people. Year two, I want to do 200 to 250. Year three, I want to do 300. Every single person that signs up with TMP pays for or contributes to our mental illness, health and illness charity for mentally ill homeless people in Nigeria. So anybody that signs up to our one-to-one or to our academy pay for 1 to 2 weeks of resident of psychiatric care and residential care for a mentally ill homeless person. So now I can double my impact because, well, if I sign up 600 coaches over the next 2 years and including last year's so over 100, and then we support 600 people with their mental health, that's 1,200 people have been able to help, excluding the clients. If we include the clients, oh, I can easily help 10 to 25,000 people. So that's like the network effect of what I'm trying to do. And that's what keeps it fun. That's what keeps me engaged. I think I'm past the point now of, I don't really care about things. The only things I ever really spend money on is my technology because I need it. My journals, I'll spend a lot of money on a journal because they're very fucking important to me. And I use them every day. And that's pretty much it. You know, I don't have a great need for things. So off the back of that, it's like, well, what do I, obviously I want financial security for my family. That's a big driver. But past that, it's like, well, now what? So that's where I'm kind of going bigger and thinking, well, what is bigger than Kieran? And for me, mental health and mental performance tools should be available to everyone around the planet. So I'm using the vehicle of the fitness industries to create more change at scale. And then just going from there.
I think this is probably the only episode where I've actually been very, very quiet.
Yeah, sorry.
I actually sat there and listened to you.
Sorry, mate, I've hijacked this.
It's good. No, it's good. It's nice because it's everyone always knows that I talk a lot. So it was actually good to actually just hear someone else's actually story who's just striving for more and actually overcome so many things and just using it as a vehicle to stop other people hitting rock bottom. I'm just giving it. So the generally I'd like to know from your side of things, like you've done all of this, what would you, if you could stand in front of an old version of Kieran, what would you say to that? What would you say to him?
Give me some ages and I'll give you the answers.
Okay, let's go back to the worst point. I don't know ages. Let's go worse.
The lowest, but like me sat in the car park, crying my eyes out, my mum coming to scoop me up and take me home. I think I'd just say to him, it's okay. Like, it's okay. And I have this conversation with other coaches as well, you know, like we've got two parts of the spectrum. We've got high performing coaches that don't need a coach and they're on a completely different fucking planet, whether that's in terms of the impact they make, clients, revenue, whatever. And then you've got the other side where, you know, we've saved 4 coaches from suicide this year that didn't want to be here anymore. We coach across that spectrum. Thank you. But I have these conversations.
That's fucking unreal. That is so good. Like,
yeah, it's nuts.
You know, like that's from someone who's had suicide in their family before. Like, that's well done.
Thank you. Well, I've had these conversations and I can look somebody dead in the eyes with full conviction and say, just not today, because I've been there when I nearly did it myself. And I think that for me was one of my making moments, because I know for a fact no matter what you throw at me, if I can overcome that, I'll bounce back from this. Always. If I can pull myself out of that deep hole, I'll pull myself out of this. I'll find the way. But if I was to go back to that guy, and this is the conversation I've had with coaches, it's like, it's okay. It's okay. Like, breathe. This will pass. These moments are like the weather. And it's like, you know, you're like December, January, February time, and it's been a cold winter, and like, you know, you never think it's going to get light again, and it's freezing cold, and you're thinking, what the hell am I doing here? What is the point? And you think it's never going to change. It will change. But in that moment, it's where you've got to really sort of batten down the hatches and just stick with it. So I think that's what I'd say to that guy. It's like, just go with it, man. Like, trust me. If you just stick with this, the world's your oyster, and this is probably your toughest moment you've ever had. But what you will get coming back from this, and the strength and the foundations you'll have to go on for the rest of your life, this isn't one of the worst moments of your life. This is one of the best moments of your life. You just can't see it yet. That's what I'd say.
That's fucking awesome. I guess the only other thing is, well, I'll ask you because you asked me the same question, so I definitely got to ask it back, because what does Benmark photography mean to you? I've asked everyone else, so I've got to ask you.
I think it's the... I was going to put it into 3 points. I think the first point is your ability to communicate and make people feel confident, valuable, and special in front of that camera. I've never, ever seen that or heard that from anyone else, because we've got many shared clients. And I actually sent our very own Dr. Kate Blackford, one of the coaches here at TMP, I actually sent her for a photo shoot, and mate, she probably underplayed it. She was shitting herself for that. I said to her, look, you don't have to do it. I said, you don't have to go. I would only ever send Kate to somebody that I can trust in order for her to feel safe. And when she describes that experience, she said it was like nothing she'd ever experienced before. You just made her feel so calm and confident, and really brought that out. And that's very special, you know? So I think Benmark photography is that ability to help someone through their own shit in front of a camera. I think that's one point. And then the second point is just the quality of the work that you deliver is just world-class. Like, you always know when it's a Benmark photo, you can see it. But I think when you couple the experience and the way that you coach people through that, and we're still gonna do a photo shoot, whether that's in London or here in Dubai, who knows? Fuck it. Maybe at some point I'll say, you know what? I'll just do a little transformation. I'll get lean and I'll take my shirt off. I've never had an interest to do that, but that might be funny. And I might just go, fuck it, let's go. Because I still have, with my stuff.
I heard a little dicky bird someone saying about New York.
Yeah. So I think I should do a shoot in New York.
I'm 100% up for a helicopter trip around New York, and that's where we do it.
I tell you what, why don't we get a shirtless photo of me in a helicopter in New York?
TMP style.
Empire State Building in the background, front double bicep. Ah!
There we go. I've always said that's the one thing I want to do, is actually travel the world and just take... I completely forgot about this. I actually had a... sorry, I know I jumped in here, but I had a goal a couple of years ago where I actually wanted to spell Benmark Photo by going out to places that spell out that name, and going and shooting like an epic photo in each one of those locations.
Well, like Bangkok, I'm trying to think, Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Have I missed that? Or is that what you mean?
Yeah, like that's it. So like go like New York, then I don't know, Monaco, then like, and just travel around seeing all these different places and just shoot some epic stuff and just make memories from it, so that people go, it's not about the photo, it's about the journey, the thing of all of that lot. So yeah, maybe that's the plan for next year, as long as COVID doesn't get too much in the way.
Mate, it's been my dream to go to New York since I was a kid. So I'm definitely down for that. I've always wanted to go. I actually got offered a job in New York, and my mentor said, hey, you've been offered the job. And I was like, wow, it was always my dream. And he says, but I don't think you're ready. Really? He went, yeah. He goes, I think you go over there and you'll crumble. And I said to him, I think you're wrong, but I trust your judgment. And looking back at that younger, you know, guy, he was right. He was 100% right. And I was glad I followed his judgment. But so it's dodged me. And I was meant to go to New York another time. I booked to go with an ex-girlfriend, then we had an argument, and in the end it didn't happen. So then that got cancelled as well. So third time, mate, third time.
I won't
be an honour.
I'll be
It'll
there.
Be an honour. Yeah, let's do it.
100%. No, mate, I generally appreciate your time here because like, I know you're a very busy guy, but actually it was amazing to just share your journey with all of this. Like, and if you can just leave with one bit here for any of the coaches that listen to this, because I know I get a lot of people that are kind of new coaches coming through the business, like growing things. Give me like three things that you just say that's just going to help them steady the ship and kind of keep moving forward.
If it's new coaches and they're doing that thing where they're comparing themselves to other coaches who are more shredded or, you know, a bigger, stronger, faster, leaner, sexier, or whatever they perceive their shortcomings are, or even like revenue clients, whatever. Just remember, you don't have to be the best coach in the world. You just need to be the best coach in your client's world. And if you can really focus on the client, they're working with you for a reason. You just double down on that. Then just notice how much more energy you have around your coaching. So I would say that as a one. Number two, having the right people around you is really important. Like really important. I can't stress enough. I call them sparring partners. And I tell all the people in our academy to find the right sparring partners. That's super important. And you gotta have that, because otherwise, you know, iron sharpens iron. Otherwise you're gonna have your blade blunt. So don't blunt the blade. So I think that, and if you're looking for good sparring partners, obviously we've got that in the academy, and the academy is not crazy expensive either. Like it is affordable. So if you're looking for sparring partners and those tools and techniques, that's in there. And then thirdly, I think get really clear on where it is that you want to go, because I always butcher this quote, but it's if a ship doesn't know where it's going, it doesn't know which winds are favorable. And you got to get really clear on where it is you want to go and what it is you want to do. Because if you don't, you're just going to be like a ship in the wind chasing your tail and going around in lots of different circles and whatever. It's not worth it. So that would be my three bits of advice to any coaches starting out. If you're a coach that's already smashed it out of the park and things are good, I guess my question to you would be, you might not have any perceived limits, but I think we can all agree we all have blind spots. And I certainly have blind spots, and that's why I have my mentors and my coaches. I've done over 180 hours of mindset, direct one-to-one mindset coaching on my mindset. I still have insecurities, doubts, fears, and blind spots. And that's why I have the boredom around me. So don't be afraid to even just speak to people with more experience than you in certain fields, because everybody knows something that you don't.
That's awesome. Right, where can they find you at?
Instagram.
Apartment address.
Instagram at Total Mental Performance, or on our website www.totalmentalperformance.com. And then obviously, Ben, we've got your episode coming out in the next few weeks, so there's the Total Mental Performance podcast as well.
Awesome, mate, thank you very much for your time. I genuinely appreciate it, and I know it's late over in the desert, so I appreciate that. Thank you very much, and look after yourself, and thank you very much for your time.
Big love.
Cheers, man.